This is the Wintrust Business Lunch produced by Pete Zimmerman. Hi, it's John Williams, and hi, Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Hey, Tom.
Hey, John Williams. How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving time.
Absolutely. Always good to be appreciative and thankful for what we have.
Which is what's on your mind, I know. You host a company dinner for employees, I think. And I think a fair question for all of us is, how far should you go? To what extent do you include or exclude some people? What are your thoughts about companies paying it back to their employees?
Well, we mirrored, you know, starting off on the hot topic of the time, right, is COVID. So our company is vaccinated only, and so all of our events are vaccinated only. And we've got some employees that have been grandfathered in who aren't vaccinated, who work remotely. But any event that we do is vaccinated only, and just to ease the conscience and the fears of the many over the few, we're 92% vaccinated. So we do that. And then my belief is we have a lot to be thankful for. And we've done this every year, but last year during COVID is we host a dinner that we call Thanksgiving, not our spin on Thanksgiving, because my grandfather before he died said, if you get over 80, it's not Thanksgiving, it's Thanksgiving. You're just lucky to be alive.
Yeah.
And so we do that with our staff. And I think companies should appreciate it, and it's time to give back a little bit.
So you do that at Thanksgiving. Do you do a corporate gift then, too?
Yeah, so we do corporate gifts, and we do a little. We usually tie it into a little marketing and branding, and we give away one of our logo on a vest or a coat or a hat, and give a little something like that. But I made the decision, actually, this year we're going back to having a holiday party, and we're going to do it part outside and part inside.
I want to work for your company.
Well, we'd work you hard, John, I'll tell you that. But we do appreciate the people that do it, and we do it with clients and with staff, and we are renting out a restaurant that's got a huge outside area and an inside. And you have to be vaccinated to come to make sure that everybody feels psychologically comfortable. But we want to say thanks. This has been a really trying 2 years. And to our clients and our employees, my feeling is if you don't show your appreciation now, when's the right time?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Are more companies doing that? Because it was zero last year, and I don't recall where it was trending in 18 or 19, but the radio stations I've worked for all these years, they used to do them. Now they don't do it at all, a company party like that. What's the trend in the industries?
I think we're seeing a lot of companies that are still shying away. It's almost like being back in the office 5 days a week, that they're saying, you know, we'll give it another year, or maybe it continues on from the downward trend of pre-COVID to not do it. But there are a few companies in Chicago that are saying, you know what, our employees want it, and we're going to do this, and people want it. It's not mandatory. Yeah. I think that's the key thing. Nothing is mandatory on an entertainment basis. If you want to come, come. If you don't, no one's going to blame you for it. But it's kind of, let's help people get back to normal a little bit and get in the swing of things.
I want to say this about the place I work, because I think they show appreciation for the work we do, even if they're not hosting a party. And I guess that is another question, isn't it? Like, maybe you're not going to throw a party, but do you show appreciation? Maybe on a personal day-to-day level, or is there something else you can do? But to your point, if not now, when? I think that's pretty well put.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that say, we don't want to go to a company party. Then don't go.
Right.
You don't have to. But there's also a lot of people that say, you know what, I hosted some clients at the United Center the other day, and the place was packed, right? It was absolutely packed. And our clients came, and they said, you know what this feels like for the first time? Normal.
Yeah.
It's not like you're on an airplane, but you're wearing a mask. They go, you come into the United Center, you had to show your vaccine card, and you come in, and you're here, and no one's wearing a mask, and we're eating, and we're drinking, and we're having fun, and it felt normal. And I believe that employees, the majority, not everybody, and that's okay too, they want a sense of normalcy, and it's the role of a company in our society and our culture is to provide that. And it's easy to throw stones at glass houses, but I think that the corporate people, obviously I'm a little biased since I'm doing it, but the ones that are willing to step out front and say, we're going to try and lead the way, that's a good thing for human beings and for employees.
Tom Gimbel on the line from the LaSalle Network. By the way, getting in and out of the UC is different these days, isn't it?
It's definitely a bigger task to get out. Getting out isn't that hard. Getting in stuff.
But it's hands free. It's contact free. There's no paper tickets. You've got to have the app.
Yep.
It's got to be on your phone. You scan it, and you're not even going to do that until you pass the vax test. You have to show a card to get in. So it's a different world. It's nice to talk to you, Tom. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely, John. Stay healthy.
Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO at the LaSalle Network, LaSalleNetwork.com, TheLaSalleNetwork.com. Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarth at Work. Visit SciFarthAtWork.com. I'll give you the spelling on that in a second. Hey, Philip, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
We just talked a few minutes ago with Tom Gimbel about showing thanks to your employees. I know you're thinking about the employees that you have on staff who you're not thrilled that are there, but maybe you're going to keep them, huh?
Absolutely. Typically, companies call us because they're looking at employees who are not performing and they need to sort of step up as a boss and either give them performance feedback or in some cases show them the door. And what we found in recent months, given the need to hold on to any talent you can, that a lot of bosses are saying, I can't afford to lose this person. I may just have to change their job around or the jobs in general. In fact, one car dealership owner told us, you know, you got that old adage, I just need some warm bodies around here, which frankly never really applied until now. But we don't want to risk losing people, so we're looking at adjusting jobs where we can.
I love the title of your piece, The Rising Stock of Dud Employees. I guess that's something that employers and managers have dealt with ever since there's been work, huh?
Absolutely. And really the challenge has historically been getting the bosses to step up and confront employees in a professional way, of course, share with them what they're not doing right, give them a timeline to improve. That roadmap is going out of the window for many employers, at least for the short term. This car dealership owner I mentioned to you, he was the one that used that term, dud employee, something we have not heard. And he's already made some decisions to restrict how much customer contact one employee has who was just not able to engage effectively. That guy's washing windows on cars, moving them around the lot. So that employee's job was dramatically altered just because the owner did not want to lose that individual's time.
So that's the calculation. I mean, maybe I'm going to get X out of this employee. I have to then subtract Y because of how he might damage the business. But as long as he's in the plus column, even if he's just a little bit in the plus column, you know, they do have that sort of plus minus for athletes and sporting events. Sounds like employers are doing the same sort of calculation, Philip.
Yeah, and the term calculation could not be more apt, John. In another case, for example, to use your terminology, there was a client of ours who owned some antique shops, and he had hired somebody who was, as he put it, the clumsiest person I'd ever met, but hadn't realized that when I interviewed this gentleman. So we had to change this gentleman's job so he was no longer touching any of the merchandise, given that we're talking antiques. So they had to mark the merchandise with a U and a B, U and B meaning unbreakable, and that meant this employee could actually touch, lift, and move that merchandise around. And it was interesting because it was just as you said, it was a calculation. This guy can sell, can be helpful, mm-hmm. but we have to subtract some elements of the job to make it worthwhile and not a huge inventory loss.
So you're making it sound like it's not just about belligerent employees, but maybe some people who just don't have the skills for which they were hired, which are different things, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great question. It's not really attitude that employers are adjusting for, though that's something that they do want to address as well in any environment. It's simply a lack of skills that are pretty core. And obviously you want to look at people's job descriptions. Make sure that the description, if you're a boss, take a look at the descriptions. Does it include that catch-all that the person will do other duties as needed? that language is really important at a time like this because you're going to potentially give them other duties. At some point, if the changes become more or less the routine, you might want to change the description in general if you want to keep this person on so you don't have an inaccurate description of the essential function. So there's the calculation, and then there are some steps on the adjustment side as well.
There are some jobs, too, I would imagine, Philip, just aren't interesting jobs, aren't fun jobs. I mean, I think employers and managers need to try and diversify the assignments or make work as interesting as they can. That's probably always been true. But now that people are like, I won't go to work, I just won't be an employee of anybody, it's probably more important a consideration for them than ever.
Yeah, that's really an important sort of perspective for employers to embrace if they have not already done so.
Yeah.
And it comes in two guises. One is this notion that, we have a call center client, and one employee just did not want to follow the pre-scripted questions. He went all over the map, but he was, in essence, a more creative soul, and the employer found alternatives for him to keep him around and keep him engaged. But it's very critical that companies talk to their employees about where they can find more satisfaction, more input, and have examples of very creative contributors that they can use in interviews with new employee candidates. Because if you can show them, this is an environment where you've got something unique to add, we want to leverage that, you will get more people to bite when you make the offer.
One last question off topic, Philip Weiss, Seyfarth at Work. The president of the Chicago Police Fraternal Order of Police, the union, may well have gotten fired because of some of his past conduct on social media and at other events. He was going to claim a First Amendment right to free speech, and I believe the police board was going to say, you have a right to free speech, but if you say things we don't like, then we'll fire you. Now, what's your observation about who has how much control in a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, this is an age-old question. And while it's true, John, that in public sector and union environments, people have more ability to express themselves and kind of simplifying the law, it's also true that the First Amendment, the right of free speech, frankly, doesn't apply in the private employment sphere. Meaning, you can't come into work bearing arms, which is a Second Amendment right, you don't have the First Amendment right to say whatever the heck you like. So if you cross a policy line, it's highly offensive. It's discriminatory. It's potentially harassing in nature. You can be shown the door. A lot of employees think they have the right to say what they want, but if you think about a public library, John, it's public, at least that's the term, but if you walk around swearing, they will show you the door. So there are lines for many institutions in terms of free speech, including private employers.
Philip Weiss, the president of Seyfarth at Work. You can spell that Seyfarth, seyfarthatwork.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip.
Thanks for having me, John.
Michael Edwards, president and CEO at the Chicago Loop Alliance. Hey, Michael, welcome back. I hope you're well.
I am. Thank you very much.
I want to talk about some of the numbers in October and how the city is trending with its downtown occupancy and participation. But before we get to the latest data, let's just talk about some stuff that's coming up. This is a big weekend for kicking off the holidays in the city, isn't it?
It sure is. Happy holidays to you and your listeners. We're excited to invite people to come back down to State Street and into the Loop and Millennium Park and participate in all the great holiday traditions that they've come to know and love and be together again.
I'll read from the list. The lighting of the city's Christmas tree in Millennium Park. These are all taking place Friday and or Saturday. The lighting of the Hilton Chicago Christmas tree and the unveiling of their gingerbread city. So that'll be over at the Chicago Hilton. Where do they do the, or do you know when they do the Christmas tree lighting at Millennium Park, by the way? Is that Friday or Saturday?
That's Friday. And the program starts at 5:30. I'm sure there'll be some caroling and sing-along, and the tree will be lit sometime between 5:30 and, I'd say, 7:30.
Yeah.
We're encouraging families to get down here by 4 o'clock. There's a lot of stuff to see and a lot of things to do and just make a whole evening of it. including shopping.
Yeah, well, the opening of the Chris Kindle Market. So is that where it usually is, over at Daly Plaza?
No, actually, the tree lighting is at the end of it's on Michigan Avenue at the end of Washington Street, right there at the entrance to Millennium Park. You know, just near the Bean, and it'll be packed and in a good way. Everybody will be celebrating, you know, time together.
Yeah, no, and good to know. Although I was referring to the Chris Kindle Market.
Oh, yeah, Chris Kindle Market, I'm sorry, is still in Daly Plaza, yes.
Yeah. And then you've got the Maggie Daly Skating Ribbon and Millennium Park Skating Week, which I think you have to make reservations for this year. Do you know that to be the case?
I think that might be true.
Yeah. Broadway and Chicago's Frozen musical opens this weekend. Mag Miles Light Festival.
Awesome.
Yeah. The Goodman Theater's A Christmas Carol starts November 20th. That's just
right.
Like old
and so
times,
the Mag Mile, excuse me, John, the Mag Mile, just to be clear for your listeners, that's a big Saturday event on November 20th, the big Lights Festival Parade, which is an awesome thing for the city.
Yeah, that's the one down Michigan Avenue, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Santa Claus and all of that. It's funny, I'm referring to these things like bygone days. We really only skipped 1 year, but you do need to sort of refresh your memory of how it can be done. Folks have been coming back downtown even before this. Talk to me about some of the October numbers.
Well, we're very pleased with the pace that is happening. You know, of course, we'd like it to come faster than it is. But we're very pleased with the way people are coming back. One of the interesting things, John, is it's being led in many ways by students. Some of the universities are operating at 90% capacity in terms of students. We also, residential is a bit off the charts in terms of both condo sales and in terms of rentals. And so there's a lot of residents downtown. You know, the latest census was close to 40,000. And then, of course, we have the office workers that are coming back. But the other thing that's really driving downtown is the theaters. So arts and culture are back and they're open, and there's people here late into the evening having a great time.
I just want to tick off some of these numbers here. Chicagoland's office human occupancy rose to 37% of normal and is better than they're doing in New York or San Francisco and on par with Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. So hooray for that. But wow, 37%. So I don't know how many of them are ever going to come back, but we are still just a little over a third of office occupancy.
Yeah, it's a bit frightening, to be honest. And we've had some internal conversations and think, you know, we've been thinking that office is going to lead us back, and it may still lead us back. But these other uses that make downtown so attractive, theater, dining, education, and just living here, you know, may be the ticket for us to begin to attract the office worker, you know, secondarily. If we can kind of demonstrate that downtown is, you know, a vital place to be.
What did you say about occupancy? You began this with some other metric. What was that? Residential, I think it was.
Yeah, residential is doing very well. You know, there's almost no more deals, if you will, on renting apartments in downtown. There's little free rent anymore to get people into your particular building.
Right.
And the condo sales are, you know, on par with 2019. So, you know, we're very pleased with how things are going. We have a long way to go, but we're, you know, kind of happy at the moment.
I'm laughing at a note I got from a listener who said, John, you keep saying Chris Kindle. It's Chris Kringle, right?
No, it's Chris Kindle Market.
Chris Kindle, and I say Chris Kringle, which sounds like a snack. some other numbers from you guys. Downtown parking is at 56% of 2019 levels. So nice that you can get a spot. But I guess it's interesting because that's certainly higher than the people that are working in offices downtown, 59% say versus 37%. So maybe that indicates more tourists, more shoppers, things like that.
Right. And we're seeing that in the hotels, too. Most of the hotel guests are coming down for the long weekend or a long weekend or for some kind of special event. The business traveler is a little less obvious to us here at conventions and those kinds of things. We're hoping they come back. The allowing international travel now will be good for the Loop going forward.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, we are a hub for not only airlines, but business of all stripes. And one other note here, CTA is at 54% of 2019 levels. I remember when it was about 10%. So that's an uptick for sure.
Yes, yes. And they feel very safe. I take the train almost every day, and they feel very safe. People are very respectful. Everybody's wearing their mask, and it's a very safe environment to come downtown. And if people haven't done it in a while, they should give it a shot.
Hotel occupancy, where are we on that then?
Well, it's a little bit hot and cold, so the weekends are really strong. Some are selling out, actually, and it's enabling rates to be pushed up a little bit, which is good for hotels, maybe not so much the consumer. But weekday is still a little weak because we're just missing that business travel.
Oh, yeah, right. So 55% was the September number. That is, it rose to 55% hotel occupancy. And again, I'll take your point. Better that we'd have more business travelers and get it close to 90. You know, what we're really looking at is 2020. And that was about zero for some of them for a while. So
you are correct.
55 is a step in the right direction. Okay. I suppose there's a website folks could go to, maybe the loopchicago.com/holidays. That would work, wouldn't it?
That would work great. Thank you.
Yeah, loopchicago.com/holidays for all the events we were talking about just a minute ago with Michael Edwards, President and CEO of the Alliance. Nice to talk to you, Michael. We'll see you downtown.
Right. Thank you, John. Happy holidays.
WGN Radio's Wintrust Business Lunch continues. More news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. An artificial intelligence software maker based in Chicago has agreed to be acquired by Salesforce. Narrative Science spun out of Northwestern University 11 years ago. Terms of the buyout, including price, have not been disclosed, according to Cranes. Narrative Science turns business data into information in narrative form. Its software initially was used to turn sports statistics, such as box scores, into news stories. It evolved over time to generate customized reports for customers of financial services companies. Upscale grocery chain Foxtrot will open a new location in Tribune Tower. The company, which sells groceries, grab-and-go foods, and alcohol, has signed a lease for about 1,700 square feet at 429 North Michigan. The store is scheduled to open in the spring. It'll include a dining patio that faces Pioneer Court. The Tribune Tower store will be Foxtrot's 11th Chicago location. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's all about food these days. Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. The dairy farmers of Indiana have a new celebrity endorser.
My name is Michael Vinson, and I'm the long snapper for the University of Notre Dame football team.
Yeah, the NCAA now allows amateur athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness, and Michael saw an opportunity and gave the American Dairy Association Indiana a call. Its spokeswoman, Brooke Williams, says they're used to dealing with pro athletes and agents and attorneys.
So it was a pretty cool deal for him just to reach out directly to us and say, hey, I love milk. People call me milk. Let's work together.
And why do people call him milk?
The specialist unit is kickers, punters, snappers. Had a nickname of the cheese unit. And when I first came in as a freshman, I had to kind of work my way up to that cheese status. I got the temporary nickname of milk. But then it just kind of stuck.
So Michael Milk Vinson has a side hustle as an ambassador for Indiana dairy farmers.
Talking to kids about the importance of drinking milk, all the health benefits, and then also making some appearances.
That'll be after the football season. Michael grew up in Winnetka. He played at New Trier High School. Anybody up there you want to shout out to, Michael?
Yeah, definitely a shout out. My mom and dad, Scott and Shannon Vinson, they've given me this great opportunity to live out my dream of playing college football and teaching me how to work hard and keep my head down, pay my dues. And once I get that opportunity, don't miss it.
There's at least one more opportunity Milk hopes not to miss out on after his senior season next year. The NFL.
Yes, I do hope so. Trying to find a job in the NFL as a long snapper is very hard. All teams only carry one, so there's only 32 jobs. So it's very difficult. But we have two NFL long snappers from Notre Dame, and it's just been really fun to watch them and see them be really successful.
All our best to Michael Milk Vinson. He's an impressive young man. Chicago Board of Trade, wheat, corn, and beans are giving back a lot of the recent gains. Wheat right now is down 12 cents. Soybeans are down about 4 cents, and corn is down a nickel per bushel. From the farm to your belly, today is National Fast Food Day. Every day is National Fast Food Day for a lot of us. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hey, Amy, how are you?
Hey, John, how's it going today?
It's going well. Talk to me about retail sales. How are those doing?
Yeah, so they have risen faster than expected for October. That's despite inflation, as we're seeing prices moving higher. So we're looking at, you know, and this is across a range of things too. I should note that sporting goods, food, gas, even auto. So it's increased 1.7% for October. That's compared with 0.8% the previous month. Even if you take out autos, those sales are still up, according to Census Bureau's advanced estimates. And so the numbers we're, you know, kind of expecting, the Dow Jones estimate was 1.5% and about 1% for the core sales gain. So that's even beating that kind of estimate. Most of that came from online shopping. That is the biggest gain relative for the month. That's up 4%, and that's up 10.2% from a year ago. So if even last year, we were doing so much shopping online, it's still above from that number. Prices are up at the pump, of course. So we saw some gas prices rise 3.9% in October. And year over year, that's 46.8%, of course, because fewer people were driving this time last year. But despite, you know, some a little bit of consternation about we're seeing these prices going up, we're seeing some inflation, the year over year was the strongest gain since 1991, that kind of big jump of consumer spending.
Are they expecting this is going to continue through November and December? We're going to have a strong Christmas then?
You know, we shall see. I think that's the expectation. But I think if the last 2 years have taught us anything, it's that every month the report has a totally different kind of path to it. And it's often very hard to predict right now. But given the holiday season and given how many warnings retailers have been issuing of like, hey, supply chains are a thing. Mm-hmm. Let's get our shopping done. Let's go. I think that that expectation is there. And some industry analysts have been kind of talking that way, that they expect to see more sales in November to really be above estimates, too, above what's expected.
Talk to me about Rivian downstate. How are they doing?
Yeah, I think Rivian is such a fascinating company because it's a 12-year-old startup. It's never sold a single car, and it's now the third most valuable car maker in the world. That's just kind of a fascinating position to be in. So they're ahead of Volkswagen. Volkswagen is valued at $139 billion. Rivian, now that they've gone public, they've been public for about a week, $140 billion. So the only thing above that, Tesla, is $1 trillion, and then Toyota is $306 billion. So that's a very, you know, impressive feat for a company that has yet to start selling their cars. So we see some good backing there. Of course, you know, Amazon has about a 20% stake. They've committed to taking a fleet of electric vehicles for their delivery. They're going to start piloting that in California. And then Jeff Bezos, he's a big Rivian fan. He's been driving a Rivian pickup truck to and from the shuttle as he's sending people to space. And like, he's been showing this Rivian off. So, I think it's just an interesting space, that electric vehicle maker. And of course, Rivian has a plant in downstate Normal. It used to be a Mitsubishi plant. So they're producing them right here in Illinois. We just have to wait and see what happens once those orders start being filled.
Well, there's a bar bet. I bet you can't name two of the top three auto manufacturers in the world. Once upon a time, you'd say, well, Ford and or GM and or Toyota. But now it would be Tesla, Toyota, Rivian. Would be the top three, huh? Stellantis, who are they? What's going on here?
So that's a car manufacturer. They do a lot of different vehicles. They make the Jeep Cherokee near in Belvedere, their assembly plant. They've announced that they are going to lay off about 400 workers as early as mid-January. They filed notices with the UAW, the city of Belvedere, and the state, and of course, obviously, let employees know too. And they're really talking about the chip shortage. You know, they said this, even despite this, that we've had some downtime at this factory just with Jeep Cherokee sales, but they have committed to that based on seniority, all the people that laid off, they will try to backfill other full-time jobs as they come available to try to keep as many people employed as possible. But interestingly, despite the Jeep Cherokee sales going down, and it's pretty significant, I mean, third quarter sales are down 72% for the Cherokee, but the Auto Forecast Solutions, an industry watcher there, they've expected production of the Dodge Challenger and the Charger to move to Belvedere by 2024. And so they're going to be, their redesigned models are going to be on that Stellantis electrified platform. It's called STLA large platform. And also the electrified Chrysler crossover will also be produced at that plant. So it seems like perhaps there's going to be some struggles in the year or so ahead, but by 2024, maybe that will be an even larger area for auto production.
Next time, let's talk about Foxtrot. They're opening up a flagship store at the Tribune Tower, which is our old stomping grounds.
Yeah, that's right. I know. This will be their 11th location. They're calling this a flagship store. It'll be kind of, I think, right around in that retail space. And we're seeing a lot of other retailers move in there. The Museum of Ice Cream at 13,000 square feet. I mean, it's a pretty big retail space. So it's going to look very different than when you and I were there before.
Stay tuned for more. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.